Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harrison. With me, as always, is my co-host, RJ Sines.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Oh, poor guy. We're your in-house comedy gurus who talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and, you know, what's it all about?
Life?
Yeah, what's it all about?
I don't know, man. We're just on a rock, flying around the sun. Maybe we'll hit it, maybe we won't.
Hopefully not.
What's time? I hear it's a social construct. But yet, I'm wearing a watch. It was made by someone I know.
In China?
Tim X.
Timex. All right, well, today we're talking about that hit superhero comedy blockbuster.
And I mean, like, kangaroos got pouches, but I don't got jack crap. Where am I supposed to put my stuff, huh? I gotta carry a bag.
Yeah, what about, like, a pocket?
Gotta put on pants to get pockets, Ben.
You're upset that you have to put on pants.
Kangaroos got built-in pockets for their children. How come I can't breathe underwater?
we're going to answer all those questions and more on this episode. We're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
All right. That's more important.
just as important as existential life questions.
Yeah. But wait a minute, Ben.
Yeah, what's up?
Guardians of the Galaxy isn't a comedy.
What? Well, we're a podcast that likes to break barriers. And for instance, a barrier that we've set up for ourselves.
Systematic racism. Only... Wait, what?
Is only judging comedies. And this is funny, so we're going to tell you why.
And also, this weekend, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is coming out. So, of course, like, we are just stoked on this movie. And why not just bring you up to speed with the funniness of the Guardians of Gahool.
But before we get into the Guardians of the Gahool,
do you remember that movie?
A hit,
yeah,
in my eyes. RJ is going to take us through the world of comedy news, world news.
World news, fake news. All right. Netflix, there's another stand-up special announcement.
No.
Nah, there isn't.
Really?
There wasn't one. I just realized I've been doing this for like a month now. Like, yeah. A new stand-up special. And I just thought, I'd just pull your leg a little bit.
Nice.
Gotcha.
I was like, Aziz.
Nah. Nothing.
It's no one.
It's nobody. They're all booked up. No room in the inn, Netflix. Anyways, some interesting box office news, sir.
Hey, is this another fake news?
No, this is real.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I normally don't do fake news, but I just fake news to you. You're so fake. Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner are in talks for roles in Jon Favreau's Lion King as Timon and Pumbaa.
Oh, before you got to the end of that, I assumed that they were working together, like, creatively on a single project. I was like, man. That just seems like the craziest pairing, right?
I would not put those two in a room together. They're just kind of polar opposites.
So much shouting.
But anyways, I mean, off the back of last week's news, which was Will Smith might be the genie, which everyone was kind of like, I think this is a good matchup.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen, Pumbaa. Billy Eichner, Timon, which is great because Nathan Lane was Timon in the classic Aladdin.
Aladdin?
What did I just say?
Aladdin.
Lion King.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's a good matchup.
I think that's funny, Billy Eichner.
I think he's perfect for it.
Yeah, do I think he's perfect for it? It's hard for me to just not picture him yelling.
Yes.
And Timon, Timon, sorry, had a little stroke there. He's, you know, he's uppity. I mean, I just picture Nathan Lane, you know, he's so fast and quick. And,
right, yeah.
But not like...
yelling.
Dear God! I can't do a Billy.
That's fine. He's just a really yelly gay guy. Yeah. But
oh, gosh!
I'm going to lay down for 45 minutes.
Lena Horne.
No, a full hour.
That's when he's in Parks, right?
Yeah.
So good. What else do we have in the newscast?
Some TV news for you, Ben. The show Problematic with Moshe Kasher. Are you familiar with that comedian?
He's running into some problems.
He's running some problems all over. So tune in Comedy Central at 10 o'clock. This show is using some of the best elements of old daytime talk show to tackle some of the biggest subjects like gun control, racism, cultural appropriation, systematic injustice. It's cool. He does this podcast called Hound Tall, which is basically this live forum where he gets a few comedians together. He moderates, and then he brings in...
They drink.
They drink so much.
That's why they couldn't say town hall right.
Hound Tall. Yeah, and it just gets really bad. No, it's a really good podcast, and they bring on an expert... whether it's a neurosurgeon or a philosopher or whatever.
Or us.
Or me. For superheroes. I don't know.
Comedy superheroes.
For comedy superheroes. So anyways, he took this kind of as an inspiration for a talk show on TV. And I'm really excited.
Similar to what Sarah Silverman is doing. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. Sarah Silverman is going to be having a similar show, but it's just between her and a guest. This will be like questions from the audience, a panel. And it's this interesting commentary that goes on. So go check out Hound Tall. It's definitely one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to. And, and Moshe Kasher is very funny.
I can't picture his face.
It's...
Should I Googleize it?
Yeah, Google it. I don't know if you've seen his face before. He does writing. He's stand-up. I think he's pretty good friends with Pete Holmes. He does this pretty good bit about a racist Stephen Hawking, which I think is basically my favorite thing that I've ever heard in my entire life.
Okay, he looks kind of familiar. He was on Conan.
Yeah. Yeah, he was on Conan recently, I think. But he does this really funny racist Stephen Hawking bit. I'm going to try to do it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The human race, of course, what a beautiful thing. But of course, the human race has its imperfections. We could do without the Dutch.
You kind of got a little Russian.
A little Russian? Yeah, I can't do it. I can't. Yeah. You know what?
It's kind of tough to do Stephen Hawking.
It is.
Because it's not actually a voice.
Pull my finger. I dare you, you stupid idiot.
I feel like you got to do like...
Yeah, I don't want to...
bad? Yeah.
I don't want to push it too much. Stephen Hawking's a friend.
Okay. Of the podcast he listens.
Yes.
Every week. Excellent. Is that all the news for today?
That's the news I got for you, man.
Well, beautiful. Like I said earlier, we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. And RJ, if you wouldn't mind, please give us a little brief history on that movie franchise.
I would love to.
Clearly.
So, in the summer of 2014, Marvel Studios won big with the help of a lesser-known superhero group in their film Guardians of the Galaxy. Critics, fans, and even writers of the comic iteration were skeptical if the film would hold a candle to the 10 other entries that came before it in their cinematic universe. After essentially scrapping the entire original script, director James Gunn rewrote the whole movie once he was brought on board. Gunn had a vision for this film that would take everyone by surprise.
Including
me.
And
you.
But here's the thing. Is it funny?
Why is it funny?
Well, let me tell you, Guardians of the Galaxy is not your traditional comedy by any means. But this film came with the preconceived notions of every other Marvel film before it. Explosive action, cheesy one-liners, and a typical origin story or hero's journey plot. Guardians capitalized on comedic opportunities by betraying so many aspects of the classic superhero genre, with self-aware jokes, hilarious combination of characters, and excellent physical comedy. Guardians of the Galaxy is potentially one of the best superhero films that exists, but there's no question that it's by far the funniest comic book movie in the universe.
Whoa, Ben. Are you sure about that?
I've been pretty far in this universe.
The physical jokes in Green Lantern were out of sight.
The CGI of Ryan Reynolds' body.
The former alcohol jokes in Iron Man 1 were unreal.
No, but for reals, this movie is surprisingly funny. It's so good. I mean, I think Marvel has developed a sense of humor
definitely
in the movie, so they want that. They that levity. But for some reason, this movie was just like in a just an echelon of its own.
And I think, and I mean, we said it in our thesis, basically, it was at the perfect time. You had 10 films in this from the studio that established the type of movie that they make. Here's a hero. Here's his origin story. Here's a hero. He's got to beat the bad guy and do the thing to get the thing. And that's the type of movie they do. So with the typically same kind of movie that you've seen 10 times, along comes this film that you could just go for it with.
Yeah.
And with a, you know, lesser known kind of group, Guardians of the Galaxy. I had only kind of heard of a few of the Guardians of the Galaxy before this movie came out. So even I was kind of like, oh, I didn't know they would make a movie about these guys, but cool, it's in the universe, I'll go see it. And it just capitalized on all the stuff that came before it, because we know how these type of things work. Even in the trailers, it's they kept showing the clip of like, who are you? Like, Star-Lord. Who?
Yeah.
Star-Lord.
Come on, man. Star-Lord.
You know. Nobody? Famous outlaw?
Yeah. I remember my first experience seeing this movie. Like, I remember walking out of it saying, like, man, that felt like the first time I saw Star Wars. In that it's this big adventure that doesn't assume you don't know what they're talking about. Like, they just assume you're going to pick it up as you go. And they treat you like, you know, you're on this journey. And I feel like there's very minimal exposition for this movie.
Okay.
And I like that. That all of a sudden you're on this planet and you've been given a name. And that's really all you need to know. You don't need to know, like, you know, the people that live there or what government they subscribe to.
Yeah, you just kind of like, and that's the fun thing is James Gunn takes you and goes, all right, you're just here. You're in on this trip with us, and don't even pay attention to the details, because what matters is these characters and how they work together, and we'll have a few laughs along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't think too much about it.
Yeah.
And I really do like, I love the film in general, but I'm stoked to break down like all the comedy in it. I don't know. Do you want to get into some of the story? A little,
I mean, just as important in any good comedy is, you know, drama and intensity and sadness. I think this movie starts off right away with just a real sad note.
The funniest part, hands down.
Mom dying.
Mom.
No, but I love that. They just kind of are unafraid to just jump into that real emotional place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, immediately follow it up with Chris Pratt dancing on a unknown planet.
Which is a great setup. Because it's almost, I mean, I've made a joke for sure about the mom dying, but it is a bit of like a, oh, this is uncomfortable to watch, like a kid like crying as his mom dies. But seriously, the next scene is him dancing to Come and Get Your Love while he's like grabbing like weird alien rats and singing into them like microphones and kicking them and just kind of doing like, I don't even know, Han Solo meets Kevin Bacon from Footloose, just dancing through this like abandoned planet to do the total Indiana Jones like stone thing. But I mean,
so good.
I for the story though, I just think it is kind of almost nonsensical, and like kind of what we said, like James Gunn just says like, oh, come on, none of this stuff matters, we're just going for it. I mean, you can use the Russian plot formula. Boy find Jim, boy lose Jim, boy find friends, get Jim back, three men die.
Oh.
Spoiler alert, the Russians aren't good at that.
That's a pretty brief and grim look at the movie.
That's what happens though, right? Like he's just trying to get this gem, and then he's got to get it again, and
he doesn't know what it is.
That's true. It's like a
orb
thing that's holding the gem.
Why does everyone want that orb? I love. Okay, yeah. but yeah, I just think the fact that they jump into the sadness in the beginning and then come back with levity, it sets the tone for the entire movie that this is a fun movie that like has real depth to it, but you're already ready to laugh seeing Chris Pratt dance.
Oh, totally. And better than anything, because it's Chris Pratt. He's already established himself on Parks and Rec as Andy Dwyer, easily one of the funniest characters on that show, which is hard to be in a cast of very funny people. But he sticks out for sure. So I remember when I found out that he was in the movie and like seeing the trailer, I was just like, yes, like totally. Him as the headliner, like, of course, this is so perfect. Like the goofball, like, you know, doesn't have to be Johnny B. Good, Chris Evans to be a superhero.
Right.
But it's just kind of the like Han Solo type, you know, just the whatever. I'm just going to make it up as I go.
Outlaw.
Yeah, totally.
But he's been instilled at a young age to have a good heart. So he's like an outlaw. He's just trying to survive. But like he's going to stick up for the little guy.
Sure.
And that's what makes him Star Lord. Not Star Prince,
yeah.
Can we talk about, what's his name?
John C. Reilly.
Yeah, John C. Reilly. Man, that really threw me for a loop. I didn't know he was going to be in it. And then when I saw it, I was like, what?
I just kept waiting for, more of a joke with that. I mean, they had, Glenn Close, John C. Reilly. I was like, what? Do you know who that is? Like, they're there. Do something crazy.
I know. I had a very similar interaction with a movie that I saw later in life, even though it came out way earlier, The Perfect Storm.
Yeah.
He's in that movie. And I knew him from, you know, like Step Brothers and all that goofy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and watched The Perfect Storm and I was like, oh, Marky Wahlberg. Wait, John C. Reilly? And then he was not funny.
No.
He dies.
Yeah. He has a lot of dramatic roles, actually.
I know, yeah. So, this is probably a solid mix.
Yeah.
You know? He's got
some good lines. He's got a good role, yeah. I don't believe anyone's 100% a dick.
Ah, that was such a good line. That's so funny.
I know I'm an a-hole, but I'm not, and I quote.
And I'm quoting here.
I'm quoting here. Not 100% a dick. Do you believe him? Oh, I don't believe anyone's 100% a dick.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, so we've already kind of started here talking about Star-Lord Chris Pratt, like how great a character of it is. But the characters in this film are excellent.
Yeah, that really lends to, you know, the comedic levity of it. The fact that this is the group that got banded together. An outlaw, an assassin, a maniac, and a raccoon in a tree.
Yeah. What an eclectic crew.
Like, I guess Rocket would probably be best described as, a mechanic bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And then Groot is just kind of like the muscle.
Yeah. Groot.
/ heart. So good. Like, that's such a wacky little combination of
people. The thing that I see in those five is something I also see, and you're going to laugh at me, but I have to do some comedic sidestepping here, similarly to how the Seinfeld cast works. Not that they're all...
Groot is Kramer.
Groot is Kramer, obviously.
Drax is George.
I was saying Drax is Rocket.
Drax is Rocket?
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm losing my mind.
George is Rocket, saying.
I'm not equivocating the character by character, but I'm saying that what brings them together, what makes them work, that harmony that they have, that's that comedic harmony I see similarly in Seinfeld.
Dysfunctional, functional.
Right. How they yin-yang so well. They're, you know, good and they're bad, make each other more funny.
Sure, yeah.
You know, Star-Lord is just trying to, you know, be a part of something, and he wants a family, obviously. He's, you know, also kind of got a weak spot in the pelvis for chicks. I've
never heard it described that way.
I think I heard that the other
day. Oh, that guy's pelvis looks weak.
He's weak in the pelvis for sure. Stay away. Weak in the knees, is that the word? I don't think so.
Dude, you're digging a hole.
I'm digging a hole. Get me out of here. Help me.
Yeah, Star-Lord, he's like a suave dude.
Yeah.
But like, he's also not. Like, he's convinced that he's very legit, but like, I love when he's showing off his scars. He's like, got this when a Rajax girl tried to stab me with a fork, and like, the scar is like, so small.
Yeah. He's just trying to bring everyone together.
Yeah.
He's got typical older child syndrome. I like, personally, I think Gamora is the perfect balance for the whole group, just because she seems the most level-headed,
mm-hmm.
and has her bearings and like is very in control.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of everyone else, all the guys around her are pretty crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And she has some funny moments that you know are kind of true to her character. Like, she was kidnapped at a very young age and raised to be an assassin, so she doesn't have a lot of, you know, kind of social anything.
Yeah, she seems
any type of skills there.
She's very socially removed, which probably helps bring her more of a balance to the group for sure.
So then when she like listens to music with Star-Lord, it's so funny that she's just so caught off guard by the fact that something can be fun.
Yeah. Why did they have sticks up their butts?
Yeah. She kind of pulls a Drax in that. Yeah. Where she takes it very literally.
And she has a great callback to that moment later on. She's like, just like Kevin Bacon.
We're like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
Which is what I say every morning.
Yeah.
Just like Kevin Bacon. Waking up today.
Is that what you say just when you put your feet on the floor or when you're making breakfast or what's going on here?
Today's a Kevin Bacon kind of day. And then I dance. What's that saxophone solo part?
Oh, I thought you were like murdering a cat.
What the heck?
Just strangling.
Oh, okay, yeah, the cat was dying.
Yeah, taking things literally, like Drax, who the best punchline of all the characters, I would say, is can't take anything figuratively.
Right.
So every time they
say
something
very literally.
Oh, yeah, everything goes way over. All the metaphors go over his head. Nothing goes over my head.
My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it.
It's like, oh, what a freaking idiot.
But yeah, he's so good. He taking everything literally just provides, you know, different comedic moments. Like, I love when they're all waiting for him to come back. He's like, they're like, why did he go back to get something? But what did he go to get? And then Drax looks out and sees him. He goes, behold. And Star-Lord's flying around.
Yes.
So, oh, you're going to make a great companion in the fight against Ronan. Oh my gosh, what did you go get? He's like, just a tape.
Just a tape.
You're an imbecile. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, and he also has like no filter too, which is funny. He takes everything literally, but also it seems like he just says whatever is like on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Like, you're such an idiot. Or, you know.
I know these kids. There are these creatures. We used to roast them on a spit. He's like, not helping.
Yeah, seriously. And of course, speaking of creatures we used to roast on a spit, Rocket
Bradley
Raccoon.
Cooper. Oh, yeah.
Not Bradley.
Never.
Great voice, though.
Absolutely. He does such a good job of bringing, like, just the sarcasm and the oh, my gosh, he's got the biggest chip on his shoulder.
Just a cranky New York smuggler.
Yeah.
So good. And so I love how they
look at this Class A prevert.
There you go. Yeah. Prevert?
That's what he says.
Oh, I think he says pervert.
No, he says prevert.
Oh, really?
Yes. Where's your wife, you prevert? So funny.
I didn't catch that. Yeah, but just how they bring the introduction to him and Groot, but really everybody, they do in such, you're right, just the here he is kind of a way, and it's just his stream of consciousness, like dialogue, like, oh, look at these a-holes. Like, oh man, it makes me sick. Xandarians. Yeah. Like, oh boy.
I feel like I will say that to myself in any moment where I'm like bored of what's going on in front of me, or at least if people are being idiots, I'll be like, Xandarians, a bunch of people going from something stupid to nothing at all.
That's what I was going to say earlier. If we're going to pick any Seinfeld comparison, I'd say Rocket is George.
Yeah. Obviously. He's like he's a mix between Drax and George because, well, I just went to Drax because he's bald, but like Drax is like just like gets himself in trouble so much, and you're just like, ah, you're such an idiot. Like, why did you call the bad guy to come? Like, why did you do that? And George does that all the time. Like, just
calls the bad
forget
guy.
About the zipper.
Yeah. Not bad.
But you're right. He's like neurotic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like Rocket.
Yeah. And very neurotic. I think what's weird is that he's so insecure. Like multiple times in the film, they're like, don't call me a wreck. He gets drunk and gets mad that, you know, Drax was calling him a vermin or something.
Well, that's I hope in this, the new movie, and then movies beyond, you know, Guardians 3 or whatever, that we get to explore Rocket's history a little bit more, because I think that's such an interesting part of his character that he has those insecurities, because what is he? He was just made what am I purposed if I was just created?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing here? And that kind of is his whole motivation. Like, he's just looking to get rich and like, I don't know, I got a long life span anyway.
Well, that's
anyway.
What he said when he was, like, drunk crying. Like, I didn't ask to be made.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Put together and broken down again and back together again. Which is, I mean,
let's see what you say to a bunch of five shots to your freaking face.
That's so good. My favorite Rocket moment is when they're, like, coming together with a plan and they're all standing up and he's like, okay, well, look at us. Just bunch of a-holes standing in a circle.
Yeah, and that was an ad-lib.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
An ad-lib, like, post-ad-lib? Because, like, I get, like, the impromptu, we're on set, and we're doing the scene, and someone ad-lib something, but they shot that, and then a month later, Bradley Cooper was in recording, watching it, and then ad-libs?
Yeah. I'm sure he's watching some kind of raw footage.
Oh, for sure.
And I'm sure they kept recording, but I'm sure they were thinking like, okay, once Rocket stands up, he'll say, now we're all standing or something, and then cut. But then he stands up and like the shot keeps going. It's just like a bunch of a-holes standing around. And it's so good.
It's the same scene where he goes, ah, that's a fake laugh. It's real.
That's my favorite Rocket line. That is the most real laugh I've ever heard, because that is not a plan. He's just like, he's so like hard on his sleeve.
Yeah.
Like, he is literally yelling at you what he's thinking and feeling.
Which is the opposite of Groot, because he only says three words.
Right.
Which, again, excellent premise for every joke that happens.
Absolutely.
Because apparently only Rocket can describe him. And I noticed closely.
That's perfect.
They don't even say, Groot doesn't even start saying, I am Groot, till they get to the jail. Like, he just like kind of shrugs and mumbles every now and again. But then they get to the jail as they're going to prison. And like, what's up with Giving Tree over here? All he says is, I am Groot. We get it, buddy. He's like, oh, well, his vocabularies aren't so good. He's limited to I and am and Groot, which is great, because everything he says then with different inflections is I am Groot, which very quickly took the popular social lexicon. Which is funny, but.
Yeah, and then it provides perfect moments for Bradley Cooper to then translate in a funny way.
Exactly.
Where you're like, what? That's what he said? Or like, of course, Rocket is responding in this way. So good.
Yeah. And Groot, too, just has, like, not dumb funny with him, but he is kind of just, like, that gentle giant where, like, almost anything he does nonchalantly kind of is funny in the background.
Absolutely. He's a good percent of the physical comedy in this movie.
Yeah. I loved even... I laughed when he grew a flower out of his hand. just to get to the like girl running around
like
in that
a genuine
weird
moment. Why did
I know
you laugh?
It was a sweet moment, but like I laughed just like, what is this?
Yeah.
You're just giving flowers to strangers? Yeah. Like, who are you? That's so funny to me.
Well, it's funny too because Star-Lord is like, he's saying like, watch out for your wallets. These kids are going to steal from you. And he just grows a flower and gives it to them.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Let's break down some of the style here.
Okay.
I first and foremost, I think the fact that this film is so self-aware makes it amazingly funny around every corner.
What do you mean by self-aware?
Like, James Gunn presents this comedy in the sense that we as the audience know we're watching a superhero film, and the fact that the superhero film, like the characters inside of it, know that they're also a part of this.
Okay.
The film itself knows what it is. And so it's able to play to that with the whole, like, come on, man, I'm Star-Lord. Like, they build up this moment. Who are you? I'm Star-Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Yeah.
Like, no one ever says who in these types of movies. So that makes it even funnier. The fact that, you know, things go wrong with their breakout. The whole jail breakout plan is just
so
perfect
good.
Comedy because we've seen a jail breakout a million times. We know how these work in action movies. Someone makes a plan, and then they carry out the plan, and it all works fine. Rocket's explaining the plan. As he's explaining the plan, Groot trips a wire on
right.
the plan that he wasn't supposed to because it's supposed to be the last part of the plan, but he wasn't listening. And it sets the whole thing in motion. And there's this brilliant part where Rocket says, I need that guy's leg. And then the guy, it just quick cuts in the middle.
Yeah.
Of the you need my what?
Yes, that is a super good moment of just pure action. It's right when he gets the gun. He's like, hey, little vermin. And he throws him the gun. He's like, oh. Yeah, and then smash cut to, you need my what? and then at the end, like, it's such a good part of his
when
character.
To crash
he's just
getting...
goofing, like, he's just like, yeah, you really got it? Like, what did he look like? Was he hobbling around? He's like, I had to transfer him 40 billion units, or not billion.
I think he said 300,000 units. She's like, what's the exchange rate there? Jeez Louise. Or even at the end where they're trying to break into Ronan's ship.
Yeah.
And he goes, and that guy's eye. He's like, no, he doesn't need the eyes.
And
like, yeah, no, I need it.
It's
really
important to me.
So the self-awareness just brings so much more levity to these crazy, bizarre moments. And the music, too, in that
mm-hmm.
is self-aware, I think. Because how many action-adventure movies use, like, if you like piña colada,
sure.
like, the silliest songs from...
Yeah. Well, I think the soundtrack is used to perfection because it's built into the plot.
Yeah.
That's so smart. That's so good, you know? I think if you don't have that built into your plot, you can really only use like one, you know, kind of classic song, you know, where Suicide Squad was just like, oh, let's just do what Guardians did and just play a bunch of songs. It doesn't really work because you're just playing a bunch of random songs. It's not really a part of what we're watching.
True. Took the words right out of my mouth.
But for this, it works so well and it adds to, yeah, the whole...
I read that James Gunn intertwined like the soundtrack into his script. Like he
yeah.
wrote the script with the songs in his head. Like, oh, Peter Quill walks on set.
Mm-hmm.
This song is playing.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're going into the sunset or whatever. And I think that's awesome. I connect with that and how
yeah.
I see music and film for sure. But just the fact that a whole movie was written around this soundtrack. I mean, I love the soundtrack.
I watched
too.
A live feed. This is weird. I watched a live Facebook feed of Vin Diesel reading the script that he was given for Guardians 2. And he said, this is the only time ever in my career that I've been given a script, a treatment that came with a soundtrack.
Oh,
like
wow.
They had the songs picked out and fleshed out, like even in the script writing phase.
That's amazing.
So good.
Yeah. I think the whole movie is written for comedy. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Not that James Gunn has really... I don't think he's been a prolific comedic writer or director. But for sure, everything about this comes from the premise
mm-hmm.
of we are, you know, just up against a wall. There's we're the underdogs here.
Yeah.
No one else. We're no-namers, and we're going to push through, and we got jokes, and we got songs, mm-hmm. and this is amazing.
And you don't question, you know, all the song choices, because we've already established that Star-Lord's whole, you know, culture is 80s.
Right.
Right?
And the pre-80s mixtape.
And so that then brings in so many jokes, especially now. There's like this big resurgence in comedy to reference back to, you know, whatever, John Stamos. He's kind of 90s. Like that Kevin Bacon, like
right.
Footloose, funny, like that era.
Yeah.
The Milano, like all those little tiny references back to the 80s is so popular right now. And you got to use that because that's when he was kidnapped, and it makes perfect sense. So all those jokes just like, they really land well-timed. One after the other. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Call somebody a Ninja Turtle, and it's just like, just so subtle. A lot of the jokes I love are so, so subtle, mm-hmm. like under the breath, you know, the
Ranger knife, Rick over here.
Ranger Rick over here, another 80s reference too. But even like when they, you know, they take Drax's knife, or Drax takes that one prisoner. That was my favorite knife.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's just, it's like, but it's so subtle, so mm-hmm. quick. And then boom, right to the next thing.
Sure.
I love the under the breath jokes. I love the things that, you know, maybe weren't supposed to be caught right away, or the callbacks. It's all just so well intertwined. It's very entertaining to me.
So good. It's a pretty funny movie. Pretty funny flick.
Some would say the funniest.
I can't wait to dress up like Star-Lord.
Maybe the best callback. I'm going to say
Cinco de Mayo.
Best callback of Guardians is at the very end where Drax says, "Finger across throat means death." Which is great.
As he rips out the guy's like brain.
Yeah. As he fully understands analogies in that moment.
And then he looks and says, "Metaphors."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, not really.
Okay. Not bad.
So good.
So good, so funny, so heartwarming. Can't wait to see the movie.
We will see you there in the theater. That we go to if you're in that theater.
Stand up and be like, "Why am I laughing?"
And we'll be like, what, cuckoo.
But if you yell like, "Why am I laughing?" in movie theater, someone's just going to be like, "Shh."
You're not.
You're yelling in the middle of a film. Be quiet.
Well, that's what we have for this classic flick. And you know what that means. It's time for Ben's Wacky Facts.
Like
I said, Ben's Wacky Facts.
Like music to my ears. And by music, I mean nails.
All right. So this is the part of the show where I'm going to say some wacky facts. RJ is going to rate them on a baseball field.
Always.
Are you ready?
Born ready.
Your shirt on?
No.
Okay. Here's wacky fact number one. The soundtrack album Awesome Mix Volume Number 1 reached number 1 on the U.S. Billboard 200 chart. The first film soundtrack ever to reach number 1 without a single original song. It was also nominated at the 2015 Grammy Awards for Best Soundtrack.
Dang, good for Redbone.
Right?
Wow.
You can't get your love.
Do, 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 do.
That also got me on their Spotify, and I was listening to some of their other songs. They're not bad.
Yeah.
They have one with horns. Wait, I think that was Chicago.
Yeah, it was definitely Chicago. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's Chicago.
But what do you think about that, number one?
Dang, that's just, I don't even know how to rate this. It's the easiest home run ever that goes straight into the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, say can you see?
Am I pitchy or are you pitchy? Because it sounds like you're pitchy.
You started us off.
So you try to harmonize?
I was following you.
Don't try to harmonize. Just sing it straight, okay? No, I'm not singing anymore. Next fact.
Oh. Okay, here's wacky fact numero dos.
I pledge allegiance to the written consent of Major League Baseball.
I was like, why are you cross-eyed, man? Just work it out.
Pretty sure it's a Regan bit.
According to Vin Diesel, his performance as Groot helped him through a very dark time in his life. It was when he was dealing with the loss of his best friend, Paul Walker, from the Fast and Furious franchise. Vin Diesel was quoted saying, "It was the first time I was coming back dealing with human beings after dealing with the death. Saying the line, "I am Groot," over 1,000 times was cathartic for me, and also knowing that Groot was a character that celebrates life in the way that he does.
Dang.
Pretty good.
That hits me where I live.
Because you record the same line every day? Or because you...
No, it's just super touching. Tree? No, I know, it's just super touching. Wow. Dang, I love the performance. There's a lot of heart into it for sure, and that really adds to it, just knowing that.
And here's the thing, like, saying the same line over 1,000 times, and I'm pretty sure he recorded it in multiple languages, so it could be his voice for, like, the overdub.
Yo soy Groot.
Yep. And it's not tough to do it in a bunch of different languages because you only say three words.
Yeah.
Sometimes two more.
Sometimes just one.
And one of the words is Groot in all languages. You can't mistake Groot.
Dang. That's Vince Vaughn up to bat. No, Vince Vaughn was up to bat and then he gets called off. It's Vin Diesel up to bat. Pitcher throws the ball and right before he goes to swing, ump calls everyone and says, "Hey, wait, everyone stop. A moment of silence to remember someone you love today." And it's just a beautiful moment.
Nice. The shrug was really helpful for me. Here's wacky fact number 3. James Gunn didn't actually want to see Chris Pratt auditioning. He was convinced later by his assistant to do so. And at the end of auditions, Chris Pratt read for 30 seconds for Gunn, and Gunn stated, "I knew right then and there that he was perfect for the role." He had said he was so good that he was prepared to offer him the role even if Chris Pratt didn't lose the weight or get in shape in time. Gunn joked that he would CGI six packs onto his body, but however, Chris asked Gunn to give him 6 months to lose 50 pounds, and he ended up losing 60 pounds.
Or your money back.
No, 60 English, like, money pounds. He lost that much money.
Oh, wow.
I'm joking. Terrible joke.
No, that's crazy. Terrible joke. I think that's really crazy of a fact, and even crazier because then he went straight into Jurassic World, which apparently he had to bulk up more. Yeah. Which, I guess he looks more bulky in Jurassic World than he does in Guardians of the Galaxy. But they both are leaps and bounds away from Andy Dwyer. So.
Yeah, right? I think the biggest I feel like I've seen him was Zero Dark Thirty. He looks like, whoa, you look jacked, man.
He looks like Zero Dark Zero, you know what I mean?
Terrible
joke. Scratch that from the record. I didn't say it, I promise. Okay, very wacky.
Pretty wacky.
Chris Pratt headed up to bat, and then Coach James Gunn comes out of the ball pit and goes, "Hey!"
Ball pit?
That's where they all hang out,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
They're in the ball pit. And he's like, "Hey, no. Chris Pratt, you're not going up to bat. Come on, buddy." And then his assistant coach comes like, "No, sir, Mr. Gunn, sir, let him up to bat. He's going to hit." And he's like, "Oh, okay, fine. Just go. Have some fun. I'll be in the ball pit." And then sure enough, Chris Pratt bulks up to a nice Zero Dark 30. And then, boom, hits a sweet line drive over the fences.
Nice. Line drive home run.
Yep.
That was my nickname in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just letting you know. All right. Well, that's what we got for the show. And you know what that means. It's time for hashtag... Whale Mail of the Week.
Of course.
Read that mail, RJ.
Here's what we got, guys and gals and robots. Hey, Ben and RJ, I love comedy, and also I'm miserable. It's known that many comedians and people into comedy are also miserable. You guys are pretty funny. I bet you're miserable, too. That's a compliment. I bet most of the people listening to this love comedy and are also miserable. So why do you think there is this relationship with sadness and comedy? Why are miserable people drawn to making people laugh? Thanks, guys. Matt, sent from my iPhone.
Is that his last name?
Yeah. It's a very common last name in this day and age.
From my iPhone. Wow.
Ben, are you miserable as a human?
That's a good question. Where is your misery rate at?
Honest, like on the daily, I wouldn't say I'm super miserable, but this is a very, you know, there's an interesting connection between misery and comedy. Absolutely. I don't know if I would say misery. I would definitely say something like realism, or like you're just not as phased, I guess. I don't know, or you can see past like fakeness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I mean, I understand what Aiden's saying. There's definitely a tie between, you know, like famous comedians just being super depressed.
Yeah.
Like Chris Farley, it's like true. Mitch Hedberg, like, you know, and there's obviously exceptions to the rule. I think of Jim Gaffigan. He talks about how he's like, yeah, I've heard that, and I don't find that to be true. Like, he's just like, I love my wife and kids, and I'm, you know, I'm having success with telling jokes. I'm pretty happy. Yeah. So, you know, I don't think it's like, you know, a proven factual thing.
But there is an interesting connection, because I think even like comedy of itself is, like we talk about so much on our show, is the betrayal mm-hmm. of our reality. And so much of our reality, especially in the modern rhetoric, is look at me, everything's fine. Look at me, I'll prove to you on social media. Look at how funny I am, or great I am, sure. or whatever. But so much of that betrayal is like the, okay, but we all hate ourselves at the yeah. at our core. Like, this is, you know, mm-hmm. this is pointless. Sure. We even talked about, jokingly, but still, we are on a rock and we're flying through space very fast, hoping not to collide with anything else.
Sure.
Like, that is, you know, the misery comedy mm-hmm. connection in a way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, growing up, kids can learn to develop comedy as a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Whereas if somebody, you know, develops anger as a defense mechanism, it's like, wow, okay, you're an angry person, you need counseling.
Yes.
If somebody develops a sense of humor, you're like, wow, you're funny, you should make a career out of this. Yeah. But you don't realize that that's like actually, you know, it can be doing some harm in putting up, you know, a facade saying, I'm funny, yeah. don't look any deeper.
That's,
you know,
the, what I mean? That's exactly the Bo Burnham song that he performs about art, and he's playing the piano and singing the song where he says, you know, the kid who acts out too much, you know, they give him a microphone and say, mm-hmm. you should perform, but he hates himself. And, you know, all he wants to do is make people laugh. And like, he's just a clown and he's really sad.
Yeah. Even at the end of that too, when he's doing his Kanye bit and he like goes into his classic, you know, hyper honesty versus it's also a joke as well, where he says like I want to make people laugh, but I hate when I make people laugh, because is that really me? What does he say?
No, it's
I wish I had small hands.
Yeah.
He doesn't fret about Pringles.
Can't fit his hands into Pringle cans. I want to make you laugh, but I want to perform the way I want to.
Yeah.
I want your acceptance. Yeah, but that's what it is. Yeah, but I don't want, you know.
It's like a form of people pleasing, you know, like saying a joke and getting a laugh is like, oh, I've gotten your approval.
Right.
So I'm pleasing people, but is that really, you know, me or a good thing? Am yeah. I conforming to make sure I get the laugh? Deep stuff.
Yeah, really crazy. Thank you so much, Matt, for the email. I feel like I could go on for a whole episode just on the philosophy of just the human relationship to humor,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, we talk about a lot of things we that could do an are episode funny. Called,
is humor healthy?
Is humor healthy? Question mark? A diagnosis mark? For your health.
Because that's, we're a health podcast now, apparently.
Yeah,
because
it's, you know, we talk about shows, movies, and TV that are funny, but talking about the relationship between humor and like our psyche, like uh-huh. that's just not funny. And it's kind of like, you could have a problem if you laugh at every situation in your life. Oh. You should see a doctor. Or get a dog.
Either prescription works.
Yeah. Well, you can get a prescription dog, I guess.
Nice.
Anyways, that's a great email, and I'm stoked that we get to talk about misery.
Yeah, thanks, Matt or Aiden. It says Aiden at the top of our email, but he signed it Matt.
Different names for different folks, I guess. We'll never know.
Sent for my iPhone.
Why are we alive? Why are we on a rock?
back to that existential crisis.
Why don't I have a pouch?
A pouch? Oh, man, I forgot about that. That was a long time ago.
Why don't we have pouches? We've got enough problems. We could use an extra pocket.
Anyway, something else I would like to announce out into podcast land. Why Am I Laughing is going on a brief intermission for exactly 3 months. Pretty much all of summer, unless you're in Australia. That's
Woo!
Winter.
Spring break forever!
But that means that the first month, or I'm sorry, the first Wednesday in August, we will be right back.
We'll be right back at you with some new content. Yeah, and you know what? In the meantime, we'll still be on our Facebook and our Twitter posting constantly.
Absolutely.
Keeping in touch with you guys. Feel free to email in any recommendations. Mm-hmm. We're going to be stockpiling up on episodes, so be sure to get your idea, title, concept, movie, character thrown at us so we can absorb it, regurgitate it into this ridiculous format that we call Why Am I Laughing?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be building up some good content. But while we're gone, you can check out all of our old stuff. There's some good stuff back there. And please don't be afraid to visit our Patreon. If you support us more, well, we're going to be giving you more content. That's just a thing.
Just
it's like cause and effect.
Just because we're on intermission doesn't mean we can't give you all the stuff that we promise on our Patreon page.
Yep.
So you give us some money, we give you some content. It's easy as that. That's just how transactions work if you think about currency and exchange rates.
Never thought about it that way, but I am now. But while we're on our intermish, Arge, where can people find us?
You can always find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, and of course, Stitcher. And yes, we are a part of the PodTyrant Network, so please go to PodTyrant.com or GeekTyrant.com to hear more awesome podcasts about movies, TV shows, popular culture. Everything you need to know about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is blowing up right now on
Absolutely.
Their site.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you, every podcast on our network is going to have something to say about this film,
mm-hmm.
but they're not going to have anything to say about the comedy like we do.
That's us. That's our corner market.
So tune in August 5th, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Why is it funny? Just kidding, no promises.
But maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, it's funny.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could be just dry.
Could be terrible.
But then it'd still be funny, because why is Shrek comedy funny? Actually, do you know?
I don't know.
Gotta go listen.
Oh.
Go back into the catalog.
Okay. Yeah, also be sure to check out our Twitter page, at WhalePod, our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing, and our email is whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. Even if you write an email, we'll read it after the intermission. I promise it all comes to our inbox, people.
Absolutely. Say anything and we read.
That's how it goes in this biz.
Mm-hmm. If you want to follow RJ on the Twitterverse, you go to @RodolphoTheBrown.
And if you want to find Ben at Twitterverse, you can find him @RacistStephenHawking.
It was the only one left. Thank you again for tuning in this week. We appreciate all of the listens that we get. We got to thank Ben Sound for our theme music and Wolfpack for our outro music. If you want to tell your friends and rate us on iTunes, it's going to help us stockpile all the goodness for when we come back.
Yep. Thanks so much to all of our listeners. We love you all and can't wait to come back with more laughs.
Absolutely. First Wednesday in August, we'll be here. But until then, we leave you with...
what we always leave you with.
Comedy is all about...